Hey guys,
hey.
How are you doing?
How are you guys doing? So this is Zach.
And this is Stuart.
And we are talking about Hoolanta 2018.
Hoolanta. This is why I'm wearing my fez, I got my multicolored scarf, and my chucks on.
Wow, three different doctors.
Three different doctors.
Do you have three different sonic screwdrivers as well?
I do not. I do not. I only have the one, which is a regular screwdriver.
Well, I mean, that's enough to get you
into a door.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So this is a convention coverage episode.
Yeah, we were invited to Hoolanta.
Yes.
Which was awesome. We did a bit of coverage. We got to hang out with a bunch of cool people.
Yep.
We did some interviews with the folks there. It was great.
Yeah, it was super fun. This year it was May 4th through 6th at the Atlanta Airport Hilton.
Hilton, yeah. That's the first time that they had it there.
Yes, yes. Yeah. It's a much, much bigger hotel.
You know what they say. It's bigger on the inside.
It is bigger on the inside. There was a huge amount of walking around room between
there was.
The panels.
There was.
There were a lot of opportunities for people to take photos of each other in their costume.
Yeah, and there was a lot of costumes to be held. I actually ended up doing some cosplay myself on Saturday.
You did?
Yeah. It wasn't Doctor Who related because I don't really have a particular outfit besides the outfit I'm wearing right now.
But it was space and time related.
It was space and time related. We'll get to that on that particular day.
Yeah.
But so let's start off how we normally do. We're just going to walk through our day, sort of talk about what panels we hit, what we learned, what was the takeaway, and I'll kick it off to you. What panel did we start off with?
So, we started off at the opening ceremonies. Opening ceremonies are always really good to go to at a convention if you've never been. Mm-hmm. Now, both of us have attended Hoolanta when it was previously called Timegate.
Yeah, yeah. I actually volunteered there a couple of times.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun to see people that I had recognized there. And you actually saw a couple folks that you recognized, too, in the volunteering area.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. People kind of run in the same circles with these conventions because I've worked with them at other ones that I've volunteered at.
And I'll also say, before we get these things kicked off, picking up badges, super easy.
Yes, super smooth.
Yeah, they had their registration all organized. Sometimes when we go to these conventions, there's a lot of hustle and bustle, but they were getting people through, and it was really nice.
Yeah, especially on the first day, because you know, you haven't quite gotten everything working, and we were there as soon as the desk opened.
Yeah, and so they had our badges right away, and they knew exactly who we were, since, you know, popular faces were popular, right?
Well, they had a list and we registered.
You mean popular faces, but all right, yeah.
So during the opening ceremony, you know, the cons typically go over if they have a charity component, what it goes to, some of the quote-unquote gets for the convention. In terms of guests, they introduce you to some of the more prominent guests that they have invited.
Yeah.
This year, the charity for the convention was Fur Kids.
Fur Kids, yeah. We actually, before the opening ceremony, got to talk to the representative of Fur Kids there.
Yes.
She was there along with a little puppy that she was trying to get adopted. His name was Simba. He was very cute.
He was. He was very bitey.
Yeah.
But, you know, puppies.
Puppies.
I think he was 10 months
Yeah,
old?
10 months old. He was doing really well with people. He seemed to be fine with everybody sort of petting him and getting him all of the attention.
Yeah.
And, and it was really nice. She said that, Alan had reached out to them and wanted to set this thing up, and some of their book sales as well as the cabaret sales went to Fur Kids.
Yeah, so Fur Kids was there. They had a table there where you could make a donation to them. Mm-hmm. I believe that they were actually filling in applications for people who wanted to foster.
True.
As well. And then, like Stuart said, the proceeds from two of the books, or partial proceeds from one of the books, and then all proceeds from the second book.
Yes.
Children of Time, I think, was the one where all the proceeds were going to it.
As correct.
Also, like you said, the cabaret admissions.
Yes, all of the cabaret, because it was a $5 donation at the door, even though you could donate more. I gave them $10 because I love the furry kids.
Nice.
Yeah.
We also found out that there was an exhibit that was actually at Wholanta this year called Wibbly Wobbly Timey Wimey.
Yeah, it was somebody who had brought a bunch of props.
Yeah.
They weren't all stage or film props, but there were some of the props that she had created, and they were film accurate.
Yeah. And then some of the props were actually used in shooting. Like, I think she said that they had an Ood mask.
They did.
It was kind of a Doctor Who experience thing. You could pay for a chit that would get you in and out the exhibit space all weekend.
Yeah.
So it was a one-time admission thing. Really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
There was also a representative there, they said, from a service called Filmstruck.
Right, yeah.
Which I had never heard of before. It's the Turner Classic Movies streaming service. They do Criterion Collection, art house movies, old television shows, mm-hmm. and they were there. If you had seen some of the older Doctor Who episodes that they were airing in the viewing room, while the rep was there, you could kind of provide some commentary.
Yeah, you could talk about what made you love these films.
Right.
What films you enjoyed.
Yeah.
And they would sort of try to base some of the things that they wanted to come out with on people's opinions.
Right. And the other thing of note was the Wholanta app.
Which was really cool. It's one of the first conventions that we've been to, the smaller conventions that had an app besides Dragon Con.
Yeah, usually with smaller conventions, it's a lot easier just to print out, 2,000 copies of the schedule and just have people highlight the things they want to go to or circle them or star them or what have you. With the app, though, it really makes a lot of sense because within the app, you can actually kind of create your own schedule.
Yep.
And also give whatever panel
feedback.
Stars and feedback. So the convention has an idea of what panels work, what panels are just kind of off the wall.
Yeah, and it really makes that convention cater to the attendees.
Right.
Yeah.
After the opening ceremonies, we stepped into a panel in the Otherworlds track called The Sorting Hat.
Yeah. Harry Potter sorting people, but not Harry Potter people, random people.
So basically the way a sorting hat panel works is...
because this was my first time at a sorting hat panel.
Yes.
Yeah, so I didn't know what to expect.
Well, sorting hat panels, the way they work is you have the houses of Gryffindor, Hufflepuff, Slytherin, and Ravenclaw.
And Gryffindor, no.
I said Gryffindor.
Okay. I was going to say, you can't forget about my house, Gryffindor. The best house.
Slytherin for life. So the way it works is they take media properties, Captain America, for example, and they'll sort them into a hat, and the audience will provide feedback, and it's kind of a fun thing to go through.
Yeah.
In ours, we determined that E.T. is a Slytherin.
Which was, you didn't expect it, but through this panel, you sort of talk and debate and pick out the strongest characteristics of a particular character.
Right.
And it's kind of interesting to see other people's takes on it.
Yeah.
Because I was going in thinking that it was a Hufflepuff, but my mind was changed to Slytherin.
I guess I would have thought Ravenclaw because science, like it's a science mission, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it makes sense because he kind of uses that kid to
get
where he wants.
And yeah, his ambition is strong, and he's, you know, just trying to get back to his family. Also, there was Godzilla. We sorted Godzilla.
What was Godzilla again?
Godzilla, I think it was Gryffindor.
Gryffindor?
Yeah, because of loyalty and everything.
That makes sense. I mean, it depends on the era, which era of Godzilla you're using, but yeah, I can totally see that.
Yeah. Wasn't there an era of Godzilla where he was, like, the combinations of all the souls that had died in Hiroshima, and they were super angry at people, like, moving on from that fact, so he was, like, destroying things?
That sounds awesome, but I'm not aware of that.
I think it's a thing. I think it's, like, a really weird story of Godzilla of where, it's just a bunch of souls of all the people who died in the atomic bomb. And then he's super angry at the Japanese people because they have forgotten all of this, you know, tragedy. So he comes back in Godzilla form.
Huh.
Yeah.
I mean, if that's the case, that's really awesome, and I want to see that. I'm not familiar with some of those.
Look it up. Yeah, I got that random knowledge. Anyway, going back to the panel, yeah, there was a lot of cool people that you didn't think about, and the panelists were really nice, too.
Not thinking about, he means media properties.
Not panelists. Sorry, that was probably...
The panelists were all great, but
they were all authors and people who have done other media-type things as well.
Right.
Yeah. But since it was the first panel of the convention, it was really nice because it was kind of intimate, and we were able to just really talk one-on-one with the panelists.
Yeah.
Which was really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And then after that, I went to the a panel, again, in the Other Worlds track that was Philip K. Dick, The Man in the Short Stories. It was really a dissection of the panelists talking about aspects of Philip K. Dick's work, which, if you're not familiar, he wrote... there's a lot of media properties.
Apparently, he wrote a lot of things.
Yeah, no, he wrote a lot of things.
We missed that question.
Yeah, which we'll get to in a second. But the stories that he wrote have been adapted into multiple different media franchises: Blade Runner, Minority Report, Scanner Darkly, Total Recall.
Recall, the remake?
The remake, the show.
It was a show?
Screamers. Yeah, there was a show on Canadian television for about a season.
Crazy Canadians.
Yeah. A lot of his stuff is really mind-bending. It makes you question your perception of reality and your place in the universe.
Ah.
He also had some psychological issues. Like, they didn't bring this up in the panel.
Mm-hmm.
But I know from my random collection of knowledge that something sparked him, and for about 2 or 3 weeks, he just would not communicate in English. Like, there was a spark in his brain. He only communicated in Attic Greek, which is a dead language, which he did not know.
Oh, so he was just mumbling, making up words.
No. Letters that he would write, they placed the language it came from. And I want to say it was, like, Attic Greek or Latin or something that is, he would have had no reason to know.
Yeah, but was he actually making sense in that language?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, it's a, huh. I want to say it's an actual thing called glossolalia, I believe. The panelists were basically just sharing their favorite aspects of his story, some of the lesser-known works that he's written.
Mm-hmm.
I think Flow My Tears, The Policeman Said, which is a really long title for a short story.
Yeah.
His stories all focus on identity and your place in the universe, and a lot of them are really depressing, but that's kind of why I like Philip K. Dick. That's why you go there.
Yeah.
And it really fits well with the theme of the convention, because, you know, like with Doctor Who, there's so many different iterations of the Doctor. I think that would totally be a topic that Dick would write on.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
The next day we went to the first one of the day, I believe.
Right? Yeah, it was the Saturday. We ended up going to the earliest panel that we could get to, and that was
Libraries and Librarians in Fantasy.
Yeah, because, well, I have worked at a bookstore before,
mm-hmm.
and Barnes & Noble is kind of like a library, unfortunately. So I was interested to see the panelists' take on just the library system in fictions,
mm-hmm.
as well as they talked about some of the libraries here in the real world.
Yeah. So yeah, the panelists were all very knowledgeable about the you know, services that a library would provide, and
yeah.
how its analogs within a fantasy construct would work.
Yeah, because, I mean, most of the knowledge that you need to defeat something is probably in a library.
Yeah.
Except if you're in Cthulhu Land, don't go to that
Burn
library.
Burn down the library. Burn it down.
Reading is bad. But yeah, it was cool. We got to talk about a lot of, like, fictional libraries.
Yeah.
I believe Buffy was a big contender.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer was a huge one. The show, The
I have not seen that show, so... No,
I need to watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, I have not seen Buffy. But I have seen The Librarians.
Oh, you have? I haven't. I mean, it looks interesting, but I don't have television.
So. Yeah, I've seen, like, a couple of episodes. So that was cool. They also talked about The Magicians. They have a library scene as well. I was actually thinking of Avatar, The Last Airbender. There's a library underneath the sand with a giant owl who keeps it guarded.
Yes.
And gives you knowledge. Yeah. But yeah, it was cool just to sort of see these fictional libraries. Oh, Belle from...
Yeah, Beauty and the Beast was another...
I believe from...
Once Upon a Time?
Once Upon a Time, yes. Yeah. Yeah, she was brought up too because apparently she's a librarian.
Yes, in that show, which yeah. I've not made it that far into that series.
I haven't seen that series at all. Yeah. So, but yeah, and then we also talked about real world libraries and how they're changing and evolving to the newer times with all the digital works and everything along those lines.
Yeah.
How they're moving it from paper to the digital space.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is cool. I mean, it definitely gives people opportunities for the public domain things. You can go and check them out without even having to go to a building. You can go online and check these things out.
Yeah, like Project Gutenberg.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they talked some about, I would call those more databases
yeah.
than libraries, yeah. but, I mean, they serve the same function.
Yeah.
And if there's any librarians listening and you want to correct us, you can send us an email, because I will admit I am not myself a librarian.
So. Neither am I. Neither am I. But I can pretend to be a librarian.
Please
I can...
don't. So the next track that we went, or the next panel that we went to...
It was Alien, but not too Alien.
Yes.
That's right. It was fun. it was, we got to talk about aliens, basically, but not the xenomorph alien from yeah. Ridley Scott.
Yeah, it was a panel focused on how an author would create a sense of the other, quote-unquote, mm-hmm. when they're building a world out.
Yeah, and it was more focused on the written word,
mm-hmm.
because... It's hard to describe something that is unnatural to the human eye. Where I believe there was a passage read there, and it was talking about how this creature who had these particular eyes, but the eyes weren't actually its functioning eyes. But as us, you know, identifying as humans and... thinking about, well, the eyes need to be on the face.
Yeah.
That's where we would identify these eyes are. This is where I have to look when I'm right. talking.
Right.
which was really cool. Yeah. I mean, you know, coming from a writer's perspective, it's super hard to describe abstract aliens. I know reading H.P. Lovecraft, when I'm trying to read his material, it's super hard.
Yeah.
Because he uses a lot of complex language that I don't know. So I need, like, a dictionary next to me so I can understand what he's trying to describe to me.
Yeah, and the thing with Lovecraft, this is just a personal note, is that my understanding of Lovecraft is that he was kind of born, I guess, 100 years too late. Like, he would wear clothes that were out of the fashion.
Yeah.
So he would use very antiquated words. Yeah. He would, I think, purposely go out of his way to use antiquated words in his horror fiction. In the Cthulhu mythos, even though apparently he did not like that term, in his Cthulhu mythos, to kind of create a sense of unease in the reader, because he knew that most people aren't reading a book right next to a dictionary.
Yeah. Well, also, I believe on that whole Dickish side, he thought that reading was more for the upper class, so he tried to use more complex language so the lower class folk couldn't, like, grasp his reading.
Yeah, I mean, there's that as well.
He was like, screw them.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, libraries, that's where we were, right?
Nope.
Aliens.
Yep.
I'm firing on all cylinders today. aliens. It was interesting. Again, a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. The panelists were very well versed in what they were saying. There were a lot of authors there, too, on that panel.
I think three of them were authors and one of them was a game designer. Which, a game designer, you can't tell me there isn't world building involved in game design.
Which is really cool, too.
Yeah.
And one of the authors wrote medieval stuff. So you're trying to think of, like, an alien race. Like, dwarves are alien. They're not human.
Yeah, exactly.
So it was cool to see that perspective from different people who are bringing it from different genres of writing.
Yeah. Following that, we went to the literary track to participate in trivia.
Yeah.
Trivia that I will say was probably the most difficult trivia I've ever been at.
It was hard. Because, again, I do read a lot. I worked at a bookstore. I was like, literary trivia? That sounds, like, right up our alley.
Yeah, because I read a whole lot, and I like collecting random facts about things.
Yeah.
There were some questions there that I just threw me for a loop because you had to get all... Remember the one where you had to place the authors in the chronological order of their deaths?
Yeah, that
They gave eight authors, and I didn't know two of them, and so... Oh, no partial credit.
But that was, like, the last question.
Yeah, it was. It was so, also the most difficult
question. Yeah, so that was going to be difficult, and that would make you... Because we could have bet zero, but of course, we bet it all.
Yeah, yeah, that was the other thing, is that you could bet all of your points, or you could bet none of your points.
Because the trivia was done bar style, mm-hmm. where there were a few teams out there. We all got pen and paper. We came up with team names, and then for each... category, they would give us three questions.
Yeah.
And then with those three questions, we could bet 3, 5, or 7 points.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the end, we got our grand total. We had that final question about the author's deaths, and we could bet as many points as we had.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a lot of fun. There was a lot of facts that I didn't know.
Yeah, that's also the fact that you were referring to earlier with Philip K. Dick, where apparently there have been 15 different media properties based on his writing, which...
Amazing.
I thought there were, like... I mean, I knew there were a lot. I didn't know that there were 15.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I will say most of the things that he wrote, when they've been adapted, they've been twisted so far out of shape that it's not really recognizable. Like,
true.
With Total Recall... The story that it's based on, when they were adapting at that, they went through, 60 or 70 different drafts of a script, right?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently on the first go-round, the original screenwriter adapted the story to make it work for a movie, and the producer said, "What are you doing? This is unfilmable and useless." And they go, "Well, I thought we were adapting this story." Yeah. And the producer goes, "No, we're making Raiders of the Lost Ark on Mars. Make that."
Oh.
So, that, yeah, when producers get involved, you may
yeah,
lose some of the original vision.
Yeah, unfortunate. but it was a lot of fun. We learned a lot. I think our best category was sci-fi.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we came close. We were like almost there. Almost.
Almost. Well, I mean, we were fifth out of six teams, so.
Almost.
Almost. That's almost.
So, after that, we went to the panel, The Last Jedi, What the Fans Wanted.
Yeah.
Which was probably one of the most packed, well, probably the second most packed.
Yeah, in the non-Doctor Who tracks.
Yeah. It was good. I enjoyed it. I know that me and you have differing opinions.
Yeah, I mean,
when it comes to Star Wars.
Yeah, I don't want to get into. Yeah,
we're spoilers. Not going to get into a debate.
Yeah, not going to get into to spoilers for the
or
movies.
A debate.
One of the things that I noticed that kept coming up were people, the panelists were talking about the fans of the movie pushing forth their own theories and wishing they were filmed.
Yeah.
I feel like my problems with it are I'm fine with what was filmed. I think I want to take an editor's razor to it and cut some stuff out and rearrange.
Yes.
Which is, I think there's a distinction between rearranging what's there and pushing something new entirely.
Yeah, pushing your own agenda. And again, we both have differing opinions on mm-hmm. what we think would be cut.
Yeah.
But you know what? That's another subject for maybe another cast.
Yeah.
But to say the least, it was a very good panel.
Oh yeah, absolutely. All of the panelists were very passionate and they knew their stuff.
Yeah.
They
even had a guest panelist who flew all the way from New York.
Yeah, New York. She actually marched. She was saying when we were talking to her outside of the panel mm-hmm. that she cosplays as Princess Leia. And she...
Princess Leia?
General Leia. she as Leia Organa, or Leia Organa Solo.
Yeah.
And she was actually on the field at Yankee Stadium, because apparently all the Major League Baseball stadiums had, like, May the 4th stuff because May the 4th was on Friday. So she went to that, packed her bags, and then jumped on a plane to make it to Hulanta.
Yeah, which is dedication
there. Dedication, yeah.
And it was really nice talking to her after the panel.
Yeah.
Again, we had just a nice discussion talking mm-hmm. about what we felt our Star Wars would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, after that panel, we went to
The Shape of the Mummy. Old monsters are new again.
Yeah. I didn't see the mummy. I when I was coming in there, I was thinking of Brendan Fraser's The Mummy.
No, this was the Tom Cruise I'll say catastrophe. It was focusing on why the Dark Universe is not happening. And for anyone who doesn't know, Dark Universe was going to be, I believe, Universal's attempt at a shared universe type film like the Marvel movies.
And from what people were saying, it sounded really cool. I wish it would have happened.
I wish it would have happened too. I mean, I've got a gigantic tattoo on my leg of the Creature from the Black Lagoon. I just want my Creature from the Black Lagoon movie.
But you got it. Shape of Water.
Yeah, but it's not the same thing, man. It's not the same thing.
No, that's more from Hellboy. That's how Abe Sapien.
But no, yeah, like the Dark Universe, I mean, basically the conclusion that the panelists came to was that they were pushing way too much, way too fast.
Like, yeah.
With Tom Cruise as the mummy, Johnny Depp was lined up, or signed up, rather,
yeah.
to be the Invisible Man.
That would have been good.
Javier Bardem was going to be Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Angelina Jolie was going to be Bride of Frankenstein, which was actually going to be the follow-up.
Going to be the first movie. Yeah, it was going to be...
First one after The Mummy.
Yeah, which is kind of weird. You would think that Frankenstein, then Bride of Frankenstein. But no, they were going to do Bride of Frankenstein, then Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which, maybe this is the reason why it didn't work. They had this giant vision, and they were trying to cram it so much that it didn't work.
Yeah, whereas, you know, the Marvel Universe is successful. Because Warner Brothers has the same problem with DC, in my opinion. Like, they're trying to...
They do.
Their third movie out was the big hero team-up, or the villain team-up movie, Suicide Squad.
It's yeah. Like,
because they saw that Guardians of the Galaxy worked, and they made a similar movie, or tried to, and it's like, well, I mean, you don't have buy-in. Like,
yeah. You haven't laid that foundation yet.
Yeah.
You like, want to jump to Avengers without making those separate movies, and without making those movies good. Like, Iron Man's a good movie. Fight me.
Okay. No, it's enjoyable. Like, I can see why that sparked off the franchise.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the panel was really interesting. The panelists all knew their stuff inside and out. And I have a special place in my heart for Universal movies. They were kind of the first shared universe films.
Yeah.
And I would love them to go back to their former glory and box office status. But
yeah, and you know... Maybe it'll happen. Maybe they'll see the mistakes that they made in The Mummy, and they'll learn.
I want to say I was looking, and in January of this year, they hired a new production team, but then in February, they shut it down. And by production team, I mean the showrunners left, and so they hired the same cinematographer, costume designer, and I think editor, maybe? Editor and set designer for a project that got killed a month later.
Okay.
Which, you know, that sucks.
Yeah.
And then we split up.
We did.
What did you do? And then we'll just kind of go back and forth.
Okay. Because
I think we went to three different things.
I believe we did. So while we were going to all these panels, they were showing Tank Girl.
Yeah.
The movie Tank Girl, which I've already seen. I enjoy Tank Girl. I have a couple of the comics and everything. So after they showed the movie, a podcast was coming on to talk about the movie. They had one of the co-hosts. This was her first time seeing the movie, and the other one loved the movie. So he wanted his co-host, and they were husband and wife.
Okay.
Yeah, wanted her to see this movie and then talk about it. Now, the movie's actually directed by...
Rachel Talalay.
Yes. Who actually did a lot of Doctor Who stuff. She directed a couple of Doctor Who episodes and specials.
Yeah, she was actually slated to be one of the guests. But unfortunately, as they said during the opening ceremony, she had to pull out... right before the convention for undisclosed reasons, but she was originally slated to be there. I can see why they would be showing Tank Girl.
Yeah.
That according to her, to the internets, she directed Tank Girl. Mm-hmm. That's one of the first movies that she did. One of the first few that she did.
Yeah. And I believe that they were going to talk with her and everything, but, they just sort of talked about the movie, which was really cool. I mean, if you haven't seen it, it's a very off-the-wall, wacky movie.
Oh, it's very bizarre.
Yeah. Ice-T is in it as one of the kangaroo dogs.
Yes, he is. Yeah, so it takes place in
Australia.
Post-apocalyptic Australia. There are mutated kangaroos, and a big theme of the movie, Malcolm McDowell playing a bad guy, as per usual, is basically hoarding water.
So this
is basically Fury Road,
kind of,
you know,
an early
20
Fury
years
Road.
Before.
Yeah, and Tank Girl, who lives in a tank, and she's actually in the comic books a mercenary, too, which is really cool. And she has sort of a romantic sidekick, which is, I forget his name, but he's a human who was a dog. But he was such a good dog that he became a human.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. And then she has a bunch of other friends, like Jet Girl, Boat Girl.
She lives in a jet.
Yeah, yeah.
Lives on a boat.
Yeah. It's where you live plus girl. So it was really cool. It was kind of cool to see another podcaster there sort of doing the thing live.
Yeah.
Which is, I give them mad props for that. I couldn't imagine doing something live.
Oh, there's no way that I would want to attempt that.
Yeah. and they were talking to us. This is a great theme of this whole convention, was there was a lot of panel interaction.
Yeah.
There was a lot of times where they would talk about a particular theme for maybe half the panel and then open the panel up to a lot of Q&As and would give you good feedback.
Yeah, and at least in the panels that I attended, the audience, not participation, but the audience back and forth with the panelists, it was always something that was constructive or added to the conversation. It was never, you know, with a larger convention, sometimes you'll go to a panel and someone will speak up and they're trying to either correct a panelist or, you know, be the actually guy, which, side note, don't be the actually guy.
Yeah, no one likes that. No one likes that.
All of the guests at Hulanta, at the panels we were at, whenever it was always adding to the conversation. It was always constructive, which is a really good thing to see. And it's a really good environment to be in just as a con attendee.
Yeah. So they were talking to a lot of the people at that particular panel, and, you know, you got to talk a little bit on their podcast and sort of add what you thought the movie was about or what scenes you really enjoyed and stuff. There's a fantastic scene where the villain is actually drowning someone to death, which, in a water crisis, like, be so ballsy to, like... kill somebody in a resource that's valuable is interesting. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. The two co-hosts were really interactive and were really engaging, and I enjoyed myself thoroughly, and I was glad that I got to sit and enjoy their cast for a good hour.
Well, and while you were doing that, I was doing the 80s effect, Stranger Things and the new nostalgia. And it was really interesting to the turn that the conversation took, because it started out obviously focusing on Stranger Things. And then it kind of diverted to Ready Player One and things of that ilk that are just reference after reference after reference. and the distinctions they were drawing between, you know, that Kevin Smith type of media regurgitation and referential treatment of things to something like Stranger Things, which takes that nostalgia and actually tells a new story with it. Like, you can see the tips of the hat, the references to Stephen King and the fonts, the kids on bikes that Steven Spielberg kind of made popular. And it's a new thing. Although it could have been made in the 80s. The thing that they kept, or not that they kept bringing it up, but one of the things that came up was, you know, they took old school graphics, obviously, for the opening intro.
Yeah, made it look really worn. Cool.
But, you know, with some of the things that pop up, which, you know, spoilers, there's monsters in Stranger Things, as much as you'd expect.
You're the monster.
They use... some CG with that. And it's like, you know, look, you don't have to make things the way they used to be made, because sometimes it doesn't work so well. Sometimes it's scarier to use newer technology. Sometimes it makes it look better.
Yeah.
And I it mean, makes it progress. Feel more real. Yeah, exactly. So that was a really good panel. Again, it was another one with a fair amount of fan interaction or audience interaction with panelists.
Nice. Nice. And then the next panel I went to was Solid Gold, Murphy Gold's Top 10. Now, Murphy Gold is a composer who does most of the music on the current Doctor Who. He did a lot of stuff from 9, 10, and 11.
Oh, wow. So,
Yeah. So, it was a panel just sort of talking about his style. talking about the particular themes that everybody enjoyed versus some of his misses, I guess. There was a statement about he's not going to be on for the new Doctor, the female Doctor.
Oh, really? Why? Yeah. Did the BBC sever that, or did he sever that?
I think the BBC did.
They're going brand new everything.
Yeah, yeah. Gotcha. I think they're going to try for a different sound.
Okay.
I think he's still going to be there consulting.
Sure.
So he's still on staff, like, able
he's
to...
He's just not actually scoring each episode.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Gotcha.
And, I mean, if you think about the main Doctor Who theme... And how many iterations it's gone through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, that man is... He's got a lot of talent to make that interesting.
Well, it's interesting how the Doctor Who theme... Like, if you go back and listen to the very first Doctor's theme...
Mm-hmm.
Or the earlier Doctor's themes... like, I'm thinking specifically of Jon Pertwee. I think he was the third Doctor. His opening theme... It sounds really different from newer Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But it's still familiar.
It is.
Like, it's interesting how the composers can take that and kind of make it their own, but it's still very clearly recognizably Doctor Who.
Yeah. And another cool thing that the convention had was on their Facebook page, they actually had quite a few polls and quizzes and things along those lines. So one of the polls was for this particular panel... And it was asking, what was your favorite companion theme? And Rose's theme actually won out with a high percentage of the vote.
I can see that.
Yeah. Where Rose's theme is more on a poppy kind of level, where it's more upbeat and it has that particular melody to it.
Yeah.
Clara's was second.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And that has a more of a like a Downton Abbey sort of feel,
or proper, more
proper, yeah,
paced, yeah.
So that was really interesting to let's see. One of the main songs that people really liked was the Song of Freedom, with all the oud. You remember when they were getting
freed?
Yeah. It was a really popular theme. As well as the Cybermen march.
Yeah, I can see that. Cybermen are just terrifying.
Yeah, and it's a very, like, Russian feel, like, marching in place, sort of. And they had hooked up their computer to the sound system, so we got to hear a lot of these themes and songs, which was really cool, because I think... On my personal opinion, the music in Doctor Who sets it apart from a lot of different genres and things along those lines. So it was cool to see that. And, like, how they had to keep it up for year after year after year, making new songs, but not so new that they're unfamiliar. So that was really cool. And I guess the biggest... One for the Doctor was 11. 11 was one of the top rated.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I can see that, because he seems to be a more popular of the Doctors. Who is your favorite Doctor?
Actually, my favorite Doctor is David Tennant. David Tennant, not Tennant. David Tennant is my favorite. He's the one that I started off with. And I really enjoyed him and Rose. Rose is probably my favorite.
I like Rose as a companion, I think.
Yeah.
My favorite Doctor, hands down, I think, is, 9. Love Christopher Eccleston.
He's so angsty.
He's so, well, not angsty, there's a desperation to his Doctor that I feel like there's always forward momentum in his storyline, whereas I feel like 10 and 11 tend to kind of drag out and kind of turn into Monster of the Week type things. But some of that also has to do with 10 and 11 being doctor for so long.
Yeah.
Whereas Christopher Eccleston was doctor for a season.
A season.
His story is much more truncated and much more fast-paced and driven and contained.
Yeah. Because I started off with 10, but then I went back to 9 to watch after I finished, I believe, the first season of 10. And I did enjoy him as well.
Yeah.
Again, he had my favorite girl, Rose, so, you know.
Well, it's funny, the I'm sure it was a big leap backwards in terms of appreciating it if you started off with 10
yeah.
and then went to 9, because 9's budget was not that high.
Yeah.
But
they still did a lot.
They did a lot with what they had, but then 10 was just like special effects.
All right. So what were you doing while I was listening to some sweet jams?
So I was in the Always Looking to the New Horizon panel. It focused on new generations in Star Wars, and it focused mainly on the trends that happened throughout the three different trilogies.
Nice.
One of the interesting points that the panelists made was that one of the big complaints with the last film, or The Last Jedi, is that...
Last Jedi got into that panel as well?
Yeah, it did.
Jeez!
Yeah, so one of the complaints that apparently a lot of people had with Last Jedi was that it was so political, but one of the panelists was making the point that Star Wars movies have always been political. It's just Last Jedi's is much more in the forefront of the story, whereas, you know, the original trilogy came out during the Cold War.
Mm-hmm.
Right after, you know, Flower Children of the 60s, and it was very anti-authoritarian. The prequel trilogy comes out, you know, kind of on the cusp of pre and post 9/11. And so a lot of the themes in there are like, you know, you don't know who your enemy is, and, you know, what's the government doing over there? What's going on over here?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, so they were just saying that the different iterations and the different generations within the fandom have changed and kind of reflect that, and I'd never stopped to consider that, really.
Yeah.
Another thing they pointed out was that, going back to special effects use, the original trilogy, obviously, no CG. The prequel trilogy has way too much CG, but they were also making the point that CG was kind of the thing to use.
It was.
Like, it was cutting-edge tech.
I know this might be a really a bad statement, but I enjoyed the prequels. I enjoyed them.
All right, you can send emails to... No, I'm joking.
No, I mean, I did. I enjoyed them. I loved the pod racing. It was cool. I don't think Lil Anakin was annoying. I enjoyed Darth Maul. And then I can get we'll probably have a cast about Star Wars where we'll talk about all that. But I liked the prequels. Fight me.
I like the prequels, change my mind. I mean, there are moments here and there. I think when I've appreciated them the most, I've seen them on fan edits on YouTube, where it's someone's kind of re-edited all three movies into just one longer movie.
There was some chaff that does need to be cut.
Yeah.
I mean, mainly in the second movie, but, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I would honestly say the first drags in terms of stuff. Too, but that's another discussion.
Yeah, again, another discussion.
So I guess you know, all said and done, the panel opened up a lot of things I had never really stopped to consider before, because, you know, I really, really like Star Wars. At the end of the day, it's space wizards with light swords.
Pew, pew.
And so I kind of, I guess, only really appreciate it on a surface level. Although, you know, I've read the books and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was just eye-opening to sit in a panel and hear things that I never really considered before. But, you know, once you're thinking about it, it feels like, oh, why did I not notice this before?
Nice. Now, while you were in the Star Wars panel, I actually went to the cabaret. And it was a lot of fun. So, again, at the beginning of the cast, we said that there was a donation. So, that was really nice of them. And they had quite a few performers. First of all, it was hosted by Moxie.
Who, Lieutenant Moxie Magnus.
Yes. Who is a fantastic MC. She was hilarious. She actually ended up doing a bit, too. She had her own little, like, slotted time. But as she was emceeing, she was throwing out jokes that were hidden very hard.
Oh, well, she has to.
Of course. She's a fantastic lady who has a fantastic stage presence.
Yes. Now, Lieutenant Moxie is the chief cosmetologist on the Enterprise.
Yes.
So she beams in every year from the 23rd century.
That is correct. Correct. After she, you know, does everybody's hair on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, Shatner, he needs his head done.
Yeah, well, that's all fake. So, all the toupees, that's all.
But they make them look so good.
Do they, though?
So, the cabaret was great. They had quite a few performances. They had a comedian.
Like a stand-up
comedian. Nice. Who did nothing but Doctor Who jokes. It was...
Huh.
Yeah.
How long was the set?
It was about 15, 20 minutes.
Okay. That's solid.
Yeah. And they had a ukulele player.
Was it Cat Smith?
It was Cat Smith, yeah.
Okay.
And she was great. She had her own songs. She did, like, some cover songs. And, man, playing the ukulele looks really hard.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Surprisingly hard, considering it's 4 strings.
Yeah. And then, after that, Moxie actually played one song on the ukulele. And then she had a drum solo with that ukulele.
Oh.
Yeah, destroying it. Because she was playing some heavy rock. Heavy rock.
All fair.
Yeah. So, sometimes the rock takes over you, and you have to destroy. And then there was, two other folks who did music as well. I forget their name at the moment, but they were cool. They did cover songs of famous songs, but added their own geeky lyrics to it. And then there were these two other folks who did stand-up, but with, puppets.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So all in all, it lasted longer than an hour, and it didn't even feel like that long. I wish they would have ran it for maybe 2 hours, because everybody was hilarious and it was really enjoyable.
Cool. Yeah. And this was now all the proceeds of this went to Fur Kids.
That's correct.
Like they said during the opening ceremony.
Yeah. And again, the minimum was $5 for a ticket, but you could actually donate as much as you want.
Yeah, which it's for charity, so donate as much as is comfortable.
Yeah,
especially since it's a good cause.
Yeah. Yeah. So that was the cabaret for me. Afterwards, I ate. It was a good meal, and then I went to the masquerade.
Oh, okay, what was the masquerade?
So, the masquerade was a costume masquerade.
Okay.
It was a lot of fun. It was all costumes from Doctor Who. Now, nice. I totally forgot. So, Saturday, I started talking about costumes, and I was like, oh yeah, I was wearing a costume. But I didn't end up doing the masquerade because it wasn't Doctor Who themed.
Right.
I've been putting together a costume, and it's slowly coming together. I didn't have it fully together, but I kind of wanted to take it as a test run.
Yeah.
I don't think Saga has come out yet. I'm looking at Zach, and he's shaking his head. No. I love Saga. we'll actually do a cast on Saga. Yeah,
that'll be the next main episode that comes out.
And you'll hear how much I love it.
Yes.
So I ended up cosplaying as the main character, Marco, from Saga. And it was really cool because a lot of people recognized who I was, even though it was kind of half put together. I don't have everything that I want yet, but people recognized me. I got a couple of pictures with people.
Nice.
There was a time when we were walking together, and this one lady stopped me to ask me, "Oh, who are you?" And Zach was like, "I'm just going to keep on walking away because I know this is going to be like a 30-minute conversation about Stuart telling this person to go and read Saga."
It's like, I already know how awesome Saga is. I'm going to my panel.
Yeah. So I sat, I was like, you should read Saga. So yeah, I was cosplaying as Marco, and it was fun. It was a lot of fun. A lot of people recognized me. That always makes you feel good when you put, you know, all this hard work.
Well, there's a lot of work and effort, like you said, that go into cosplaying. Like, there's no way I would ever really do an in-depth thing like that, because your costume looked great.
Yeah, and the masquerade is a great time to, like, sort of show that off.
Yeah.
I took a lot of pictures, which will be on the Facebook as well.
Right.
And there were quite a few good costumes. And Moxie, again, was hosting it.
Oh, okay.
She was hilarious. She actually didn't even reuse some of her old jokes from the cabaret. They were all new jokes.
Nice.
Because, you know, sometimes you have to reuse a couple of them when your joke bag's getting empty.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's great stage presence.
Yeah. And again, go and check those photos out.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest things that kind of hit me was there was a kid who ended up dressing up as the TARDIS. Like, dressed up, as, like, you know, he got a cardboard box and painted it and everything, and he put it on. And he wanted to dress up as the TARDIS because he actually had a disease, a heart condition. And he wanted to show that his heart was bigger on the inside.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. So that was really nice. It gave you the feels. And then there was another lady who it was her first time doing a costume contest.
Oh, really?
So she was super nervous, but she did really well. And Moxie would ask them, you know, how much time you would take and put into your costume. And some of the costuming that people did was amazing. Some of the work that, like, sewing is so difficult. I could never imagine doing sewing. So it was really cool just to see all the hard work and the effort that people put into these costumes, which were great.
Well, now, did the Dalek compete?
No.
Earlier in the day, there was someone who was going in around the con as a Lego Dalek.
Yeah.
And the way that they had the blocks set up and painted, it looked like Lego blocks making a Dalek, which super, super cool. I didn't know if they performed in the masquerade or not.
No, I don't think they did. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I really enjoy watching people's costuming and stuff like that. They also, at the end of it, you could take a bunch of pictures with them. So, it's cool.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, that was the masquerade.
Yeah, I think while you were doing that, I was in the panel Lovecraft. Daggone it.
Mm-hmm.
Check the pun. Has it been 100 years? And it was a panel focusing on Lovecraft, his different stories. It was kind of a version of the Philip K. Dick panel that I went to, where they were kind of talking about media properties that have been made off of Lovecraft's writings, some of the history of his writings. Like I said earlier, apparently he did not like referring to his works as the Cthulhu mythos. That was something that some of his friends referred to it as. You know, they were calling it a shared universe in terms of literary stuff because, you know, after he died, his friends were still writing in that world and kind of expanding on it. So it's kind of ballooned out from his original writings. I'm pretty sure you can pick up a single volume of the original works that Lovecraft wrote
cool.
in the mythos.
Yeah. I know, I have a couple.
Yeah, I mean, there's not that many in the actual mythos, and so all of this other stuff came from other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is really interesting, the way it kind of evolves over time. You know, brought up John Carpenter movies, fingers crossed that Guillermo del Toro will actually make Call of Cthulhu / Mountains of Madness.
That would be fantastic.
That would be amazing.
Is there rumors?
Yeah, I mean, it's been in pre-production for a while. I don't know if he's doing any of the writing on it, or if he's just doing directing, or if he's just producing it.
Still, that would be really cool.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the panels was a game designer, and so he was talking about the Call of Cthulhu game. They were talking about Eternal Darkness. It was an old GameCube game, if no one's played it.
I played that. That was a lot of fun. That was one of the first games that will actually, try to trick you.
It will. So in the game, and I played it a lot in high school.
Yeah.
At the time, there wasn't a whole lot of this, but the game, when you start losing sanity, would start to mess with you. So it would act like it was restarting, or that the system had reset, and if you just wait for it to get through the opening logo scroll, it would be in the game again.
Yeah.
Sometimes it would purposely act like it was lagging, or there was a disk load error.
Or there would be items all over the place.
Yeah.
And you'd just be constantly picking up ammo, but you wouldn't have any ammo.
Yeah. So really, anytime media messes with your perception of reality,
that's a win in my book.
Well, yeah, it's a win in my book, but anytime that happens, that's a very Lovecraftian thing to do is to make the player or the audience feel like they're going crazy, I'm a fan of that. I'm a fan of body horror. I like these.
A fan of going crazy?
So in media, I like the very loose grasp that people have on boundaries and what makes them them.
Yeah.
that's my favorite type of horror media to consume.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, they did a really interesting panel. The panelists, and I'm not as familiar, I'll admit, with Lovecraft's works. So the panelists were all naming short stories, and I'm in my head going, okay, I need to read that. Okay, I need to read that.
Yeah. Didn't you buy a book there?
I did. So there was a book that one of the panelists was selling. She had a short story in it. It's a collection of off-kilter short stories that different writers had written.
Cool.
So the one that she had written, which I still need to go through and read, but her take on the Lovecraft type genre fiction was Lovecraftian stuff where atomic testing in the 50s has kind of woken up something. Which is really interesting because she admitted she is not a horror writer, but she was writing things that gave her a chill.
Very cool. Very cool.
And then the last thing.
Yep.
That we both were at.
Yeah. Oh, well, you go.
Oh, sure.
You can go for it.
So
I've been interrupting you all this time.
Late night nerd fight.
Aha.
Focused on spaceship TV shows. Now, no one's been to one of these, I know that they happen a fair amount at Conjuration.
Some at Dragon Con.
Some at Dragon Con. Basically, what they are is what would you call it?
It's a bracket.
Yeah, it's a bracket. Yeah. That's the word I was looking for. I was like, it's not ladder match. What's the word?
Nah.
Bracket.
Brackets.
It's a bracket.
Mm-hmm.
Where whatever media property you're discussing, the audience will and the panelists will vote on it after making their case. And usually the arguments are timed because there's a time crunch. So it's like you have to make your case in 2 minutes or less. All right, go. And so this one was focusing on spaceship TV shows. It was in the
The spaceships. The spaceship TV show.
Right.
Which we had to clarify.
Yeah, for the first few, people were like, well, the Battlestar could totally take on the Firefly, and it's like, nope, nope, it's not the ships fighting, it's the quality of the show.
Yes.
that was very fun. It was really interesting to see which shows people preferred.
Yeah.
Because I know, I don't know anything really about the Expanse television show, other than I know it's in my Amazon Prime queue.
Yeah.
I read the books, not a huge fan of the books, honestly, but, they're just not my thing. I can see why they'd be appealing.
Yeah.
It does make me want to check out the show, because I feel like my opinion of the books are that they would make better screenplays than...
Okay, yeah, then, yeah, you should definitely check it out.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. Again, going back to that whole interaction, because we were able to get our vote in as well, because they would count up everybody in the room's vote, and we could also make particular cases for what show we enjoyed, what show we thought was the better show.
Right.
Yeah. So that was really fun. They said that it's always a really good panel, and it was. So I enjoyed it.
Yeah. It's hard to say anything negative about a panel where the audience is the one kind of contributing to how the panel or how the bracket turns out.
So, yeah. And the panelists were really good at like moderating too.
Yeah, because
sometimes somebody might go on for a bit about a particular thing, and we're like, all right, you're not actually adding any additional information. Let's move on.
Well, so one of the people there was actually running a slideshow where they had done every iteration, and so she would of what iconic ship for representing that show would be head to head against this other one. And so what she was saying after the panel was that she had every possible iteration. Yeah. So she would, when the next bracket came up, the panelist sitting next to her was keeping track, and so she'd go, all right, I'm going to pull up this image. Yeah. All right, go. Which really added to it, because you could kind of look at this iconic ship that this TV show is based on, or set and taking place on, and go, okay, I get warm fuzzies looking at that one. I have no idea what that one is.
Basically,
So it really kind of guided the vote at that point.
And it was interesting, too, because the panelists had sort of come up with their own predictions of how things were going to go.
Yeah.
I think none of them got them correct.
Yeah. None of the panel, like, they were saying afterward, they're like, yeah, this, I no idea that this would go this way.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I definitely recommend if you're at a particular con or if you go to Hulanta to check out this panel. This was top-notch panel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like I said earlier, go to the Sorting Hat, go to the late night nerd fight panels, because those are things that tend to crop up at different cons. And they're not really specific to anything, although the panels themselves at that particular convention obviously will be focused towards a certain property.
And I forgot one panel that I went to. I'm not going to talk much about it because it is spoiler filled. There was a panel about the new Marvel movie that came out.
Avengers Infinity War.
Yeah. So we got to talk about that. It was a good panel. It was the most packed panel. I don't think there was a empty seat available. It was a good panel. That's all I can say.
Was it therapeutic?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of even getting into the little spoilers too. But yes, it was good. It was very good to talk about this movie.
And okay.
Yeah, because you don't want to spoil it for anybody, but it's a good movie. So yeah, that was in the middle between, I think, the Masquerade and the Cabaret.
Okay.
So yeah, it was a very well attended panel and was good. But yeah, I think that was the Saturday. It ended up where I was sick on Sunday, and
I had prior obligations on Sunday, so unfortunately neither of us were on Sunday. I wish that we were, but unfortunately neither one of us were able to make it.
Yeah.
I do recommend, if you're ever going to a convention, to go to the closing ceremonies, because sometimes you hear, you know, surprising news. I wish we had gone, because I would have wanted to be there for the news. Yeah. The news that I'm alluding to will show up in, we're going to take a quick musical break, and then we will be speaking with
Alan,
who is one of the co-chairs of the Hoolanta convention.
Yeah, he was nice enough to spare some of his time to talk with us.
He was, yeah. So he'll kind of elaborate on that. And we will be back after that interview for signing off. So we'll see you guys later. Didn't know what time it was. The lights were low. Oh, oh. I leaned back on my radio. Oh, oh. Some cat was laying down some rock and roll.
All right. So, Zach, we have a special guest with us today.
We do.
He is the man behind Hoolanta.
Exactly.
My good friend, Alan. Alan, how are you doing?
I am fantastic. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Again, thank you so much for giving us this interview.
Yes, thank you very much.
I appreciate it. And full disclosure, me and Alan are good friends. We used to work together at Barnes & Noble.
Oh, Stuart and I, we go way back.
Way back.
we've done all kinds of stuff together, like break into the manager's office when keys got locked in there.
I forgot all about that. Yeah.
What's the statute of limitations?
Had to climb through the ceiling tiles and stuff to get into the next
That's
office.
Right. I ended up having to pull like a Mission Impossible where I was crawling through the actual ceiling.
Oh, no.
Oh,
no.
The best night of work ever.
But
not much can make Barnes & Noble interesting, but that sure did it.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Yeah, because you were always a great manager to work with. But enough buttering you up. we've got a couple of questions.
There's not enough of that.
We've got a couple questions for you. Okay. I guess the biggest question on our mind is... what kind of numbers do you have for the actual convention, if you have those numbers available?
Or if you want to share those, like they're the, I guess, pre-reg numbers versus on-site trends, maybe, for this past year?
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually have numbers.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
In fact, I asked earlier today, and the boss has not. I'm one of two co-runners. The other one is the one who handles all the money.
Okay.
And I'm the one who handles all the fun stuff like events and programming
nice.
And guests.
Nice.
Yeah. So I get to have all the fun and I make her pay for it.
Well, that's the best position
anyway,
to be in.
So I was asking earlier today and we haven't got all that stuff yet. But what I do know that our pre-registration and our hotel room, like our people booking their hotel rooms, all that was pretty much exactly in line with last year at least and our recent years. So, you know, we probably had about the same size audience, but in our new hotel is enormous.
Yes, yeah. It was.
Even if we had like, you know, a 50% increase in our audience this year, it would still have looked kind of small, dwarfed in that massive space.
Yeah.
So, only thing I can think of is that we may have lost a little bit of our walk-up audience, you know, the people who just, like, come in one of the 3 days for the weekend or whatever, mm-hmm. because we did have a major guest cancellation 3 days before the con.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So there may be somebody, one of the stragglers, you know, who decided not to make it down. I don't know. There's no way to know.
Well,
so I'm pretty sure that we were pretty close to right in line with normal.
Yeah. And we actually had a good opportunity. We discussed and talked with one of the attendees who just came for Saturday, and he brought his friend along. And it was his first convention that he had ever gone to.
Yeah, his first convention, period.
Yeah.
Nice.
And he was having a blast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm so glad.
He definitely said that Moxie was his favorite.
Now, for your listeners, maybe we should explain, Moxie is in fact Lieutenant Moxie Magnus of the USS Enterprise. She is the Chief Cosmetology Officer.
That's right.
So she takes care of the hair and makeup of everyone on the Enterprise.
It's quite a
and
job.
Yeah, I'm telling you, and you know, I mean, just handling Shatner's toupees is a job amongst itself. But she beams down from the 23rd century to our convention every year. She does a show on Friday night. She hosts our cabaret and our masquerade on Saturday night.
Yeah, I have quite a few notes. I was actually at the cabaret, so it was.
And this is the first, and our con's been going for 13 years. This is the first time I've ever missed the cabaret, and it's because I was sick all weekend.
Saturday night
got around, I was like, I can't do anymore. And I had to go to bed and just sleep it off.
Yeah. Well, that kind of moves into my second question, was how did you reach out to Fur Kids? Now, Fur Kids was your sponsor for this year, where all of the proceeds from...
Yeah, the charity of this year.
Mm-hmm. Where the proceeds of both the cabaret and book sales of Why We Geek and Children of Time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, it started first with the book. The book was something that I was working on,
mm-hmm.
Children of Time, The Companions of Doctor Who. That was something that I was working on, and the easiest way to get a bunch of people to give you essays for free is to say you're doing a charity anthology, you know, so they all are happy to contribute. And so when I came up with the idea, I was like, well, what charity should I do? And since it's called Children of Time, I was thinking of doing something children oriented, you know, but I couldn't settle on anything. And somebody said, well, what about Fur Kids?
Yeah.
Somebody who knows that I'm a huge animal lover. And she said, what about Fur Kids? And I'm like, oh, that's perfect. So I had already established the recipient of the book sales was going to be Fur Kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then the convention, we had done in-town food pantry for the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
They're charity. And we were kind of looking to maybe partner with somebody different this year.
Mm-hmm.
And so we bandied a couple of things about, and they said, well, since the book is going to launch at the con and the book is already doing Fur Kids, then the convention should just do Fur Kids too, so we can throw everything, you know, at them.
Yeah. And that
That's
was
basically how that.
That was really cool. I really enjoyed that. And I thought that was a great idea.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's all mine.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. Did you get to meet Laura from Fur Kids on Friday night?
I did. I got to meet Simba as well.
Yeah.
Yes. He was a rambunctious.
Simba was a little bitey in her being.
He was a little puppy, so he was
exactly
happy to chew on everybody and anything.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Adorable.
Well, yeah, and I had another question. So when and what first sparked your fandom? What kind of drove you to you know, co-chair a convention?
Heavy drugs.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of a prerequisite to do something this nuts.
Yeah. And you've been doing it for so long now.
Yeah.
Yeah, 13 years.
Yeah, I guess the drugs haven't weared off yet.
I guess not. Or I'm taking better ones now, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, my co-chair, Susan, that's who I started the convention with.
Mm-hmm.
We used to work for a different convention. We were volunteering for another one, and this other convention was going to do, it was in June of 2005, and they were going to do a one-day event, like a pre-convention event,
mm-hmm.
and they were looking for like a little venue to have this one-day event at, and Susan's mother was a member of the Elks Lodge, so we booked the Elks Lodge for March 25th or 26th, now I can't remember. And this is an important date, so I'm supposed to remember this. I think it's the 26th. I had it booked for March 26th, 2005, and 2 weeks before that event, it got canceled. So we were stuck with this Elks Lodge that Susan had put down a non-refundable deposit on. So we had this thing booked with no event to hold. And so I said, well, why don't we – we've talked for a while about starting a convention. Why don't we just do something? We've got 2 weeks to throw it together. We've got 2 weeks to promote it. We've got 2 weeks to come up with a name.
Yeah.
You know, and a theme, you know. And so we did. She is the – at the time was the head of the local Stargate convention, and I was the head of the local – Doctor Who, she was the head of the local Stargate fan club, and I was the head of the local Doctor Who fan club, so we pulled our audiences together and called it Timegate.
Nice.
For Stargate, Doctor Who, and Time. So, what we didn't know at the time, because the BBC never announces their air dates for shows, you know, until like the last possible minute.
Yeah.
We didn't know that the very first episode of the brand new Doctor Who series was going to air on March 26, 2005.
Oh, wow.
So we had selected a date that ended up coinciding with the BBC launching the new Doctor Who.
Oh, that's really cool.
That is providence.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was just meant to be. Yeah. It was like written in the stars.
But the cool thing was that a week before air, somebody in the British press or something, I don't know how it happened, but somebody leaked the press copy of that first episode, which I, of course, found a way to acquire.
Yeah.
Therefore, we were able to show the first episode at our con. We were the only place in America.
Oh, that's amazing.
So we got to show it at our little one-day con the same night that it debuted on the BBC in England.
Wow, yeah, that's really cool.
That's really,
yeah,
really cool.
Like, it could not have possibly have happened any better.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that leads us to our next question.
Yeah, what prompted the name change from Timegate? Because I was looking on the website, and it was from 05 to 2016, and then you guys changed it to Wholanta.
Because Stargate sucks. I'm totally kidding. Yeah. I actually do like Stargate a lot. Because Stargate had gone off the air, and you know, I mean, from the very beginning, our audience was more heavily populated with Doctor Who fans than it was Stargate fans, and it sort of diminished a little bit each year. Like the last 2 years that Stargate was on the air, it was the show that they had on was Stargate Universe, and it wasn't as popular. You know, audience sort of like filtered away. You know, I loved that show. I thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
But not a lot of regular Stargate lovers did. You know, and then after the show got canceled and there wasn't anything taking its place and there really wasn't anything happening in the Stargate franchise, you know, there just wasn't much going on with it. So we changed from a Doctor Who / Stargate convention to Doctor Who / other British media. So we sort of focus more on other British properties, you know, classic and modern.
Yeah. And that's a good question. Who is your favorite Doctor?
All of them.
All of them?
I love every Doctor.
You love every Doctor.
I do.
Even Eggleston?
Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to see what...
You're just trying to test me.
I'm just trying to test you. That's right.
I know. Don't talk trash about Eggleston. He's my favorite.
Oh.
See? Look at that. I will say, I over the past 3 years, I have developed an insane love of Peter Capaldi.
Oh, okay.
But I was, I'd seen him in a couple of things prior to him becoming the Doctor, and he was in season 3 of Torchwood.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I used to be, I was on staff at Dragon Con for, you know, 12 years or whatever. Mm-hmm. And every year I would say, we would talk about Torchwood and I would say, Peter Capaldi was the most brilliant thing about, you know, I would just go on and on and on about Capaldi. So when he became the Doctor, I was so excited.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
I think he is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if I had to pick a favorite, it would now be Peter Capaldi.
All right. Well, do you have a favorite companion?
Well, I have a new book out that covers 88 of the companions.
That's true. That's true.
From television, audio dramas, comics, and novels.
Yeah.
So, no, I can't possibly pick up out of all those people.
Yeah. I could.
One of my favorites is Leela, not just because the actress, Louise Jameson, was a guest at our convention this weekend.
Yeah.
She's been a favorite of mine forever. Okay. But, I mean, there's so many.
There are.
And I love most all of them.
Yeah, it's hard. It's like trying to tell you to choose between your children. Which child do you like better?
That's probably easier.
That leads me into another question of, you guys have a lot of big names at your convention. Who is your PR representative, and how do you guys get in contact with those people?
Oh, well, it varies. Some actors, even if they have like an acting agent or a voiceover agent, they will sometimes manage their convention appearances themselves.
Okay.
And then other ones have their acting agent do it for them, or they will have a specific convention agent. And there are a lot of agents that live in the States that have overseas clients. And so we've, you know, just worked through various agents. Louise, like this year, Louise does her own convention negotiation.
Oh,
so,
cool.
You know, we dealt directly with her.
Yeah.
But other ones have had, you know, either a con agent or a real agent. And the real agents are tough.
Yeah, I bet.
They're more used to they tend to think more in terms of Comic-Con.
Yeah.
And they don't tend to think in terms of, you know, a convention in America can range anywhere from 200 people to, you know, 1,000 people to the biggest Doctor Who convention in the world is in LA. It's called Gallifrey One, and mm-hmm. it's 3,500 people.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And you know, but they all want to do Comic Cons.
Yeah,
you know,
but of
course. It's hard to compete in the Comic Con world.
Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what would you say your favorite moment of the convention has been over this span of time?
Well, I tell you, I will say that since I'm the one that does most all of the guest contact and some of the, at least all the initial stages of the guest negotiation, the contract negotiation and stuff, we usually let somebody else, thank God, handle things like booking the flights and, you know, because I'm kind of a flighty dude, and having to nail down details just stresses me out to no end. So I will do like all the initial setup of the like finding an agent and finding what actors are available and how much they cost and who can we afford. And then we approach one and we say, would you like to come? Are you available? Yes. Then, you know, here are our terms. And then they come back with some counter terms and then I hand it over to somebody else. So that was a long way into saying that having contact with all of these people that we've booked over the years has led to some very, very cool friendships and associations and acquaintances.
Yeah,
Katie Manning, who played a character called Joe Grant way back in the 70s, is one of the, if not the most magical people that currently lives on the planet. She is so amazing. She's so like full of love and positivity, and she's funny.
That's awesome.
And she hugs every person.
Aww.
Pets every dog that comes by her. And you're trying to move her from, like, she's done a Q&A in main programming, and you're trying to get her to where she's going to, like, sign autographs. And she stops to, like, talk to people's babies.
Aww.
And, yeah, I mean, she's just amazing. So going, seeing her somewhere else, seeing her like I saw her at Gallifrey One last year, mm-hmm. and seeing her like recognize me from a distance and come up and say, "Oh, there you are," and hug me and all this, you know, getting to know these people that I've watched on television for decades and getting to be friends with them is the best part.
Yeah,
of the convention.
I bet.
I can imagine.
Yeah. Now, I thought it was really cool that you guys had an app. I don't know many conventions that actually have apps that have the
schedule, yeah. the roster of guests, stuff like that. I mean, you know, Dragon Con, I've never been to Comic-Con. I would assume they have one.
Yeah.
But it was really good to have on my phone. Comic-Con
probably has one that's, you know, somebody developed specifically for them.
Yeah, okay.
Because we use, like, a third-party thing that provides a framework, and we just plug all our information into it and our graphics and all that kind of stuff and, you know, design the layout the way we want it and, you know.
Yeah.
So it works for us. Most of those kind of things charge a fee if you have over a certain number of downloads.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
So if it's like, you know, maybe 2,000, you know, if it's over 2,000 downloads for your event, then you have to pay a fee. We will never have that trouble.
Well, I thought that was really cool and really innovative because we've been to a couple of cons and this is sort of the first time besides Dragon Con I've seen that implemented.
Yeah, it's very helpful to just have everything at your fingertips on your phone. Mm-hmm. Just, you know.
Oh, I agree. And it's a lot of work because, I mean, it's helpful in that if you do have last-minute schedule changes,
yeah,
then I can update the website. My buddy Daniel can update the app.
Yeah.
The printed schedule obviously stays static, but we have these, you know, two different avenues where changes can get into people's hands.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, it's extra work because when you're putting the schedule together, it's more places that you have to get the information to.
Yeah.
And every one, like the printed one, the one that we make to go onto the wall, the app, the website, they're all different formats. So you have to format the information that many different ways. But it's worth it because it's so flexible and so helpful. And, you know, anybody who's got their phone in their hand, within, you know, for the most part, has access to whatever they want. And the whole flexibility of building your own schedule is worth it.
Yeah, and I saw that you could also rate particular panels, too. So it gives you guys a lot of feedback about what's more popular versus some things that weren't.
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
Yeah. Well,
and we've always used that information, too. And every year we look at it and we make determinations about the following years, you know, in different ways each time. So, yeah.
Okay, well, I guess – Other than the app, can you talk a little bit about how the convention has changed since the very first Alpha Run and where you see it going in the future?
Well, the going in the future is a big question. So we'll start on the other end. How's it changed? I think basically the framework that we, you know, when we started with our little one-day event in 2005, we did a couple of those before we moved into doing a full weekend big event in a hotel. Once we moved into the hotel, I think our basic framework has stayed the same. We have, you know, maybe added a couple of programming tracks along the way. And, you know, our basic framework has sort of stayed the same where we do, you know, our cabaret and our masquerade and our main programming sort of runs about the same, but we've done lots of different things within that framework, you know? So every year we try to add something that's new and something that's different and something that sets each year apart from the previous year. So I guess it's just more of a slow evolution as far as, you know, just changes that we make along the way to keep things fresh. As far as where it's going, well, that's kind of uncertain.
Okay.
Because we announced at this year's con that 2019 is going to be our last one, at least for a break.
Okay.
So there will be a 2019 one, and I'd say pretty definitely there's not going to be a 2020 one.
Okay.
And for different reasons, you know. It's exhausting work because, you know, there's four of us on the inner committee and we work on it all year long.
Yeah.
There's very little break from doing it. And part of that is just like guest negotiation and stuff like that. It just takes a long time. We had the longest one that I think we ever had took 5 months.
Oh, wow.
To get contract points, you know, all ironed out and stuff. Uh-huh. I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Because I know that you work on it yearly. Like, I remember when, you know, we were working together, you would talk about it nonstop. It seemed like when
you're like, shut up, dude.
No, it was like when the con ended, you would think, oh, well, he gets like a month or two maybe to relax or something like that. But no, you're at the grindstone.
Well, you know, when the con ends, the first thing you have to do is like update everything on the website for the following year.
That's right.
And you know, like we usually try to have a guest or two already ironed out so that we can announce them at, you know, this year's con for next year. So that has to get added to the website. Mm-hmm. And then usually around Christmas, like from October, November, December, that's when we actually do kind of take a break.
Okay.
But that's balanced out by since Christmas is right in the middle of our year because our con is in May.
Mm-hmm.
So once January hits, we are like full steam where we're like in promotion mode and you know, like heavy PR mode, and we're you know, like we're going to other events and promoting ourselves there. And, you know, I try to line up podcasts like this, certainly in the couple of months leading up to May.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's just all kinds of stuff. And that's where you have to get your programming done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just – and the programming is – we have, what is it, six programming tracks. And each one of those has its own little team, and I coordinate – all those teams into one big team. Some of those tracks run, you know, from 10 in the morning till, you know, past midnight. And that's a full day of schedule.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And man, it takes a lot.
Well, I guess, last thing on the agenda then, do you have anything to plug?
The main thing right now is my Children of Time, the Companions of Doctor Who. It's just come out. It's actually, we had 100 or so copies at the con that we sold. We had a big, autographing with a whole slew of the contributors to it and a whole slew of people that were buying copies and wanted them autographed by all that other slew of people.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it's actually, it will be live on Amazon for purchase. Hopefully within the next few days.
Nice.
I've got to upload a new file tomorrow. I got to send a new file up to the printer, and then once it's processed, it'll be ready to go. So I'll have a link in a few days, I hope.
Yeah, and we'll definitely have a link in the podcast.
Yeah,
as well.
we'll definitely put a link in our show notes.
Well, again, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us. We definitely appreciate
it. Yes, thank you so much.
Well, let me tell you, my busy schedule for the con ended yesterday. I go back to work on Thursday, and I have laid around on the couch and watched movies in between those things. So that's
like
my
heaven.
Busy schedule.
Yeah,
it's pretty much because I don't ever get to do much of that. So,
yeah.
You know, just sitting around. Like, I came home Monday. We packed the car, you know, drove everything home, unloaded the car, and I came in the house and I turned on the TV, and the first episode of a 6-episode block of Parks and Recreation started. And I'm like, well, I know what I'm doing for the next 3 hours.
Yeah. Oh, man, the stars are just aligning for you. That show is great.
Yeah.
I lead a blessed life.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you.
Hey, my pleasure. I came back like a slow voice on a wave of fight. That one, no DJ, that was hazy cosmic jive. There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks
and that was Alan with Hulanta.
Yeah, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for that interview. That was great.
Yeah, it was fantastic to actually speak with someone who has insight and behind the scenes knowledge that put it together.
Yeah.
So as you heard in the portion that he was speaking on regarding Hulanta's future, mm-hmm. it is surprising. I totally understand what he was saying about the amount of time and energy that it takes.
It is a lot of work.
So on their website now, if you go to Hulanta.com, you'll see that it's happening May 3rd through the 5th of 2019, again at the Atlanta Hilton Airport.
Yeah.
I recommend you go because, like
highly
you said,
recommend.
Yeah, like he said in the interview, there'll more than likely not be one in 2020.
Which doesn't mean that it won't be. It's done. It just means that they're taking a break.
Yeah. If you're interested in all in Doctor Who or British sci-fi television shows.
Yeah.
Or really just anything relating to space-time, literary, space opera. Like, it's a very, very good thing to go to. They have a viewing room, which I never had a chance to. It sounds like you went to the Tank Girl one.
Well, I didn't actually go to the movie. I went to the podcast.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because there was just so much to do there. Right. I didn't really want to spend time sitting and watching things because we didn't even talk about, they had a game room where you could play board games. They had set up a couple of computers to play LAN games.
LAN games, yeah.
There is so much to do at this convention.
Yeah.
It's really hard to pack it in. And, you know, we wanted to go to the panels. So, yeah, I would have loved to play some games or watch a movie, but we just wanted to do panels.
There's not enough hours in the day because there were just the two of us, and we figured that we would want to get the most coverage as we could while still going to things that we were interested in.
Yeah.
So, there is not a lack of interesting things at this convention. It is packed with stuff for you to do. Mm-hmm. And as you may have heard, you know, the Other Worlds track that was there was great. Mm-hmm. There's, if you're going to this convention and you are not necessarily a Doctor Who fan, but you're going because your significant other is, your partner is, or, you know, we spoke with a couple of people that this was their first convention ever because they were so into Doctor Who, and they brought a friend with them because... Why not? He had the day off, and so they were there, and
he was still able to do a lot of stuff that wasn't Doctor Who related. There is something there for you.
Yeah, there's something there for you, no matter what you're interested in.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If you go to a con one year and you don't see anything, that just means you need to come up with a panel.
That's right.
And submit it for the next year.
That's right.
Because these, like most of the ones that I enjoy going to is a fan run.
Yeah.
Convention.
A lot of these ones are smaller based, and that's a really good place to get your start in.
Yeah.
And again, I've been going to a lot of these smaller conventions via R versus bigger conventions because you get more stuff to do.
This convention is fantastic. There's so much stuff to do there. There's so much entertainment going on that if you look at the schedule and you see, well, there's nothing really here right now. They have a viewing room where they screen older Doctor Who episodes, movies occasionally, and the game room. Yeah, maybe you don't want to watch older episodes or you've seen them all. You can go to the game room. They had LAN games set up.
Yeah, they were playing D&D.
Yeah. They were trying to get a game of Star Wars Rebellion going on, but that's a bigger time sink.
Yeah, that's 4 hours right there.
Yeah, easily 4 hours. But
two thumbs up.
Two thumbs up. Back row approved.
Yep.
the people there were great. The staff was great. I totally understand needing a break. Mm-hmm. 2020,
that'll be your rest day.
Hulanta will be missed.
Or rest year.
But hopefully you guys will come back in 2021. Yeah, we can see how the convention has changed, what doctor it's morphed into. But yeah, again, all of the links for the things that we talked about will be in the show notes and on the Facebook page when I post the episode.
Yep.
And yeah, so
thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Again, if you want to send us an email, you can always send us an email at
backrowsupershow@gmail.com.
That's right. You can tell us how well we're doing because we're doing super well. Oh, yeah, and we also got a new mic.
Yes.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this, you're like, oh, man, they sound a lot more better.
Yeah. All thanks to new technology, so we're stepping it up. We'll see you guys next week. The next episode to be released... should be a regular episode, should be Saga, like Stuart was referring to earlier. And we'll see you guys at that time. Send us an email. Give us a shout out on Facebook. Say hey. If you see us at your next convention, walk up to us and give us a great big hug.
Unless
you're not cool with just hugging random dudes in a hall.
Or if you're sick. Don't hug me if you're sick.
Yeah, don't touch us if you're sick. Con crud is no joke.
Yeah, it's a killer.
We'll be back next week. Until then, think good thoughts.
See you guys.
All right.
Bye.
Bye.